Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, the 2023 Australian Open has come to a close, and its final act was to see Novak Djokovic return to world number one to lift the Norman Brooks trophy, bearing a jacket with the number 22 emblazoned on its chest, because of course he is now a 22-time Grand Slam champion, equaling the record of Rafael Nadal, and he is a 10-time Australian Open champion, extending his own record in that regard. The match tonight against Stefanos Tsitsipas, won in straight set 6-3, 7-6, 7-6, might not have been particularly remarkable, but lots of other things about this evening, or yesterday evening, were quite remarkable. You find us at 1:58 a.m. in Tennis Podcast Towers, Melbourne. We're all here. We've got beers. Pizza's on the way. There might be a slight interruption in due course, but we're here and we're raring to go one last time.
Yes, and people are probably thinking, why didn't they eat before they recorded the podcast? Well, I'll tell you why. The media cafe closed before Novak Djokovic had come to press, and I think that is unacceptable.
Yeah, as I stormed back from the media cafe where I'd attempted to buy nachos, I texted all in caps, I'll edit this a bit, the cafe is closed. We're leading the pod with this. So I thank you, Matt, for doing my work for me.
I've just had to turn the microphone down. You were so incandescent.
Hey, look, we're going to talk about Novak Djokovic and Stefanos Tsitsipas in detail over the course of the next hour. But first, I want to remind you one last time that the Tennis Podcast throughout this Australian Open has been sponsored by On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. They're bringing us to Indian Wells. We can officially, just like Stefanos Tsitsipas, now turn our attention to Indian Wells. We've already forgotten the match, to quote Stefanos. We're all about the future. We're looking forward, and Indian Wells is where we're looking.
Can't wait. Cannot wait.
Can't wait, yeah. And if you're a friend of the Tennis Podcast, then Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours are offering a 5% discount code to all friends of the pod for all of their tours throughout 2023. And they have also now launched their 2024 Australian Open packages, and we highly recommend a trip to Melbourne. They're also giving away one Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours package to the Miami Open, presented by Itaú, in March, to one lucky Tennis Podcast newsletter subscriber in the US or the UK. And that winning newsletter subscriber will be drawn at random from those that enter by 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday. So it may still be open when you're listening to this. It may not be. I don't have control over when you, dear listener, are listening, but it might still be possible for you to enter. Get your skates on, would be my advice, and commiserations if you miss the deadline. The prize is a 3-night stay at the official Miami Open Tournament Hotel for two guests and breakfast with, in the vicinity of, potentially, but no promises,
Danka Kovanich.
Excellent.
Can't wait to see what Dan Kras for
right
breakfast.
Right in the sweet spot. Two full day and night sessions worth of tickets to the tennis with premium hospitality and transportation to the venue all included. The link to subscribe to the newsletter is in our show notes, and the URL to enter the competition is toursfortennis.com/podcast. toursfortennis.com/podcast. Now then, Novak Djokovic.
He's quite good, isn't he? I mean,
he's so much better than everybody else. With Alcaraz on the sidelines and with Nadal an unknown quantity physically, he is just so much better than everybody else.
Mm. Yeah,
that's the long and short of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that he played Tsitsipas when Tsitsipas was coming into this match in really good form and fresh, there was nothing wrong with him. He was fine. He had to deal with the occasion. But so did Djokovic, obviously massively more experienced. And aside from a wobble in the second set when Djokovic got really, really stressed, once he started to relax, I mean, and I felt like he was ultra-focused and composed in the first set, stressed in the second, and then he relaxed in the third because it all started to flow. And he can do things to an opponent. He can upset and unsettle an opponent unlike anybody else, I think. And then he also has a gear when he himself relaxes and he can actually just wipe the floor with you, even if you're playing well. Because in the final set tiebreak, they were both playing well at the same time. And I'm watching Djokovic. I wasn't commentating on that set. I was watching him up close. And I was thinking Tsitsipas is making miracles happen to hold onto his serve to force this tiebreak, because I could see the look in Djokovic's eyes. Now he's unencumbered. He's no longer bothered by all these things that have been worrying him. He's just letting it flow. And I think that that's nigh on unbeatable on a hard court. And Tsitsipas threw the lot for about 10 minutes there. And he didn't really get close, because Djokovic is just too good.
I thought this match would be about how much Djokovic could pick on and expose the Tsitsipas backhand. And there was a lot of that. And I do think the Tsitsipas backhand was exposed. You know, it made me feel naive about my takes, having watched him against Karen Khachanov, where, you know, his backhand stood up to scrutiny, but A, wasn't hitting that many of them, and B, the scrutiny wasn't that intense, quite frankly, nowhere near the scrutiny that Novak Djokovic applied to it today. I mean, the sound of the ball coming off the racket on that backhand side for the first set was sort of tinny, and, you know, none of the hits felt clean. It was just sitting there begging to be hit. And yes, that battle did exist, of Djokovic manoeuvring the ball onto the Tsitsipas backhand. But Djokovic also out-forehanded Stefanos Tsitsipas today.
Like, and deliberately.
That I was not expecting. That was unreal.
And massively so.
Yeah.
Like, Djokovic's forehand was a bigger weapon and also more reliable. I mean, Tsitsipas, I think, was well over 20 unforced errors on the forehand. Djokovic was a handful of unforced errors. And
he was going for it. It's not he wasn't being aggressive on that shot.
Absolutely. And I think he wanted those forehand rallies, you know, as a way also to open up the Tsitsipas backhand. You know, it's a classic. You've got to go to the strength to open up the weakness a bit more. And in doing so, he turned Tsitsipas' strength into a weakness. And there were a lot of points in that second set in particular where I felt like finally Tsitsipas was playing the right sort of game style. He was pretty flat in the first set, Tsitsipas. It was interesting, their demeanours. Djokovic, as you said, David, was calm and confident in that first set. Tsitsipas didn't really show up, I didn't think. But he did start having a bit more impact in the second set. He started doing some damage with those ground strokes. But then on pretty much all the big moments, he made errors, Tsitsipas. He didn't play well when it mattered. And it was an execution problem, I think, for him today. I do genuinely believe that Tsitsipas stepped onto that court with a decent amount of belief that he could beat Novak Djokovic. He just didn't play well, I didn't think. And I think part of that is what we were saying the other night about how Djokovic makes you play badly. And it's harder to play well against him than it is against other players for lots of reasons. But he
also didn't seem to have the feel today. Like, it wasn't right. Just wasn't there. I mean, that was the worst tiebreak I've ever seen.
It was tragic, wasn't it?
That second set from both players.
Absolute tragedy of a tiebreak.
There were like 2 points that went with Serge.
Yeah, it was dire.
And he missed, I think he missed four forehands in the first six points of that. Like, but these weren't tough forehands by Stefanos Tsitsipas. This is a guy with a great forehand who couldn't get it in.
Oh, this was the forehand that I was marvelling over 2 days ago. I was drooling over it. I couldn't believe it. We spent 10 minutes talking to Jim Gurrier about it yesterday.
It got compared to Pete Sampras.
Now. I was like, what is this shot? Where's that other forehand that you had the other day?
Imagine how he feels.
It's funny, though. Stefanos Tsitsipas, and look, he came into press pretty quickly. There was a lot of sort of, I felt like in his press conference, he was trying to talk himself into feeling certain ways. He didn't want really to talk about how gutted he is. He was very much talking a good game about this being a good tournament overall. And, you know, wanting to look forward and not back. That's a direct quote. I've already forgotten about the match. Bless him. But he thought it was all about Djokovic today. He didn't talk about playing badly. And he was sort of probed on it a little bit. Nobody wanted to say, don't you think you played really badly, Steph? You know, it's a delicate one, but I asked him about, you know, what plan he went onto court with and how well he felt he was able to execute that plan. And he pretty much said, I've got no issues with my execution. I just came up against Novak Djokovic, who's unbelievable today. And he did. It probably still wouldn't have been enough. But it would have been enough to make it more competitive than it was today. I was expecting a more competitive match than that. I was disappointed in Tsitsipas tonight.
Yeah, I think, you know, whenever we talk about how someone performed against Djokovic or against Nadal or, you know, the greats of the game, you have to take into account that they're playing the greats and therefore it's, you know, it's harder to do what you want to do and harder to play well, of course. I don't think Djokovic was anywhere near his best tonight. I think there was an opportunity for Tsitsipas to play better and to extend the match. I ultimately think Djokovic would have won. He would have done enough to win. That's, you know, that's kind of his playbook in a lot of these big matches. Just play a couple of levels above the opponent. And I think he would have done that. But Tsitsipas had his chances in that second set, really. I don't think he'll have too many regrets about the set point that he had. I mean,
that was a great set point.
It was a fantastic rally. And Djokovic, again, that forehand, he got it into play. He was sort of ramping up the power a little bit by little as the rally went on. Eventually, he just pulled the trigger on one and nailed it for a winner.
We both looked at one another in the press seats and said, I bet David's commentary on that point was good.
Well, the funny thing is, well, thank you, but
well, we don't know it was good, David.
I can tell you the gist of what it was. I remember the I tend to commentate on rallies like that, not just about what the shots are being hit, but the theme, the feel of the rally, to try to get a sense across of how it seems from what I'm watching. And my sense was that Tsitsipas knew that Djokovic was tight and was just trying to make him play lots and lots of balls. He used his athleticism. He was looping them. He wasn't pulling the trigger. I thought he was trying to bait him. And Djokovic was sort of muscling the ball over it. Those were not... fluid, liquid strokes like we saw at the end of the match. At the end of the match, it's like a whiplash and a trampoline effect with the ball coming off the strings. This was not like that at all. He was heaving the ball over, grunting, trying to get them over, get them deep, keep Tsitsipas off him. That's what they were like. And Tsitsipas was trying to get the error, is how it looked to me. And then suddenly, it was like, I don't know whether Djokovic set him up for this or whether he just snapped and said, boom, I'm going for this. And he just let the arm go. And it was unreturnable, even with Tsitsipas's speed. I mean, I haven't watched that rally back on TV. That was just what I was watching out of my commentary box window. And I was thinking straight afterwards, now, do you look at Tsitsipas and think, should you have gone for it there? Should you have pulled the trigger? And I don't really think so. It's easy to say in hindsight. The way it felt, I did not see that forehand coming. Mm. And I think that's where you see the greats, the absolute greats. He was nervous and he still pulled the trigger and won the point off his own racket. Mm.
That second set tonight, it might not have been the highest quality. I don't think it was, but it was by far the most compelling of the match in terms of the contest.
I mean, still in the balance then as well.
It was. The first set was compelling because I wasn't expecting that poorer start from Tsitsipas, and I was not expecting Djokovic to be as calm and contained as he was. We've seen him come out looking stressed from the off in a lot of his matches. What was it? It was on the third point in one of his early matches. Was it the Dimitrov match in the third or fourth round where, you know, he had a stressed exchange with a ball kid not giving him a ball quickly enough? And that was on the third point. And I thought, wow, goodness, he is stressed here.
Was it against Kwako?
I think it was. I think
Yes, it was.
That's the only set he lost, wasn't it? Second set. But even the first one, I think he won it 6-1. But even then he was stressed. Mm.
And a very weird thing is that Novak Djokovic still, I mean, he's not going to have any sleepless nights about this, but he still hasn't won a slam without dropping a set. Enzo Cuoco has denied him that.
That's an extraordinary statistic. Mm. I really wouldn't have thought that was
surprising,
the case.
Surprising, isn't it? I mean, I know Federer and Nadal have both done that a few times, but Djokovic often has a match, or always has a match, where he drops a set. And, it was
what a great
Enzo
stat.
Cuoco.
That didn't even make Matt stat. Like the whole fortnight.
My best friend wanted to call her second son Enzo, and her partner vetoed it. Huh. It's a great name.
Sorry to all of you Enzos out there.
It's a great name. No, what I was going to say was it surprised me that Djokovic was so calm, seemingly, from the off. And then given that, it really surprised me how not calm he was in the second set. I thought if he was going to be extremely stressed, it would sort of present itself quite quickly. But you had this tremendous contrast. And okay, Tsitsipas rallied, no pun intended, in the second set and did make it more competitive. But I always still felt like Djokovic was on top. You know, the stress that emerged in that second set when things were still on serve, and Djokovic still felt in control was quite extraordinary to me. The way he was, and he deflected your question a little bit about this in the press conference, didn't he, David? With a bit of a twinkle in his eye, Djokovic. But it seemed very much to me like he was directing a lot of stress and a lot of wrath very directly towards Goran Ivanišević, who was as stressed himself as I have ever seen him in that coaching box.
Yeah. And it was actually at that stage more interesting than the match.
Mm.
Because Goran, you know, he's a pretty emotional guy himself and he's a big character, and we've seen him on court lose it with the best of them when he's stressed. And actually when he came in and did a press conference for us as well just before Novak Djokovic, which was also a really interesting one. We'll talk more about it in detail, I'm sure, as we go along. But in that particular instance, you know, he said, you know, yes, he does go through this, but I know what that's like. I was a player. I remember that. And Djokovic was so clear in his post-match speech about, I know what I put you guys through, and I and I'm sorry. And we've seen other players say that sort of thing. I've heard Andy Murray over the years say he might not do it publicly quite like that, but he said I've had to speak to my team because I want them to know what's happening, why I'm, you know, in a quiet moment when I'm not feeling like that. I talk to them about it so that they know that I do appreciate them, but it's venting, isn't it, for these guys? I mean, in this particular instance with Djokovic, it was just a really strange situation because it looked like he was almost trying to bait Goran into a row. I mean,
I was desperate for that row.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was thinking,
rise to it, Goran.
Well, Goran's a bit scary. Are you sure you want to go down this route here? You know, and he was just eyeballing.
Got a few inches on you.
He walked all the way from his service position back to his chair, looking over his shoulder, eyeballing Goran, and trying to get a reaction out of him. To be honest, I thought, but I think. And I mean, we were speculating, is he saying, you told me to go to the forehand. Now look what's happened. You know, who knows? But Djokovic's explanation was that I needed help. I needed guidance. And if you think back to when he was 5-1 up against Tommy Paul and he just collapsed to 5-all, there have been some lapses where he's just completely lost the ability to play tennis, which is a really strange idea given just how good at it he is. But that shows that, I mean, he's human and he's been clearly under a heck of a lot of stress.
Yeah, well, he said after the match, didn't he, that given the circumstances, this is the biggest victory of my life. And Goran echoed that in the press conference, didn't he? That quote was put to him and he said, yeah, I agree. When Djokovic said that line in the speech on the court, I wondered if he was hinting at something else that we, beyond even what we knew about in terms of stress behind the scenes. I know we know about the hamstring, we know about what's gone on with his dad, and we know about what happened here last year and all of that. As if, obviously, that's enough to be extremely stressed. But the way he said it did make me think, gosh, is there something else?
Well, I think Goran's words were that 97% of the other players would not have taken to the court. They would have gone straight to the referee's office the moment they had the scan on that hamstring. And he had a scan ahead of this tournament. Goran said all 97% of the other players would have pulled out with that. You know, that was his view. The other thing is, I thought we got a really good explanation from Djokovic a couple of nights ago about how he doesn't let anybody talk to him about what people are saying out there. He doesn't want to know. So he's pulling up the shutters. He's just blocking this stuff out. And then suddenly I think when you win, it can all come out.
Yeah, well, his words on Channel 9, he went straight to the studio to speak to them after the victory. And he said that it was a release. You know, he said, he's just had this sort of huge burden on him, and that burden has been all the things that you listed. You know, his father in the last few days, his hamstring, his return to Australia. And he said that if it hadn't been a major, he wouldn't have played. He wasn't practicing between matches at all. He was just doing a little practice before he touched the court each night. And yeah, I mean, look, it's kind of the second straight day, you know, after Sabalenka yesterday and Novak Djokovic today, where I think there'll be a lot of talk about a journey from 12 months ago, you know. And in a way, I find this one sort of less inspiring, I suppose, than Sabalenka's. Look, we don't need to go into detail about what happened last year. There were mistakes on both sides, but, you know, Djokovic was also the author of his own downfall to a certain degree. But there's absolutely no denying that he has somehow, and I don't know how, and it is, I think, what separates him from probably any athlete that I've ever seen, or, you know, certainly it's what separates him from his peers on the tennis tour at the moment, is he's used all of that adversity in his mind, all of that idea that people are against him, and turned it into fuel and motivation to play better. And in his words, this was one of his best Australian Opens in terms of actual, you know, his level of performance from sort of fourth round onwards. And that is unique, I think. I don't think anyone else can do that. You know, whether you believe that he's sort of got a victim complex over it all or not, he manages to use it to his advantage eventually. And I find it completely extraordinary how he's able to do that.
It is. And Goran is running out of words to try and describe that feature of Djokovic's psyche.
He's in awe of him, isn't he?
He's totally in awe of him. He just describes it as craziness. It's just, he said, I know craziness. I was my own type of crazy, yeah. But this is just...
Well, Djokovic
can't believe what he's saying.
I think Goran used to be his own worst enemy in a lot of those situations. Djokovic faces the adversity and he's able to harness the energy that it generates and not necessarily just vent and explode, but vent and then channel and become better. It is a superpower.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. It's you know, it's what makes him. I was on the Australian ABC show Offsiders this morning. Again, I was on it last week, and it's a really enjoyable thing to do while I'm down here in Australia. And one of the other guests today was Chris Clary of the New York Times, friend of this parish, and he was explaining to the audience why Novak Djokovic is the most interesting of the big three. And this is why his... It might also be the same reasons why he's the least loved or the least universally liked, but all of those things make him the most interesting psychologically of the three. Now, people will, you know, not everybody will find that to be the case, but I think there's a very strong argument for that.
Well, he's complex.
Yeah.
And Chris wrote that in his own book about Roger Federer. I mean, it was Making of the Master, but he did sections on all of the big three and various other people that Federer would have come into touch with. And he was very clear, you know, Djokovic is so interesting to cover. You could never get bored of just trying to find out, how did we get from there to there in his world?
And he and Nadal, who are both now tied on 22 major titles, they are two supreme competitors, the like of which I've barely ever seen ever in any other sport. But in two completely different ways, aren't they? You feel like Nadal is this incredible competitor because he has this unparalleled ability to stay in the present. To just this point, this moment, this shot is everything. It's life or death to me in this split second. Djokovic, it's all about the macro, isn't it? He's this incredible competitor because you feel like his perspective is always panoramic. It's always on the bigger picture and what it means for his legacy and his greatness and you know what it will mean in Serbia and all of that.
And
it's all about the big picture. It absolutely,
like I he will have lapses. He will disappear mentally for a period of time because he's not like Nadal. He can't do that. But what he can do then is suddenly pull it back and be even more incredible when a player least expects it, because he's just managed to focus again.
It's sort of the same headline trait,
yeah,
but manifesting in two completely different ways. It's fascinating, and of course, you know, amplified in how fascinating it is by the fact that they're both now tied on 22, which is...
This is our moment to talk about the race.
Yes, which is your moment to shine,
well,
Matt.
I must say, Goran managed to make it sound a little bit dull by calling it a handball match. I mean,
twice.
I'm sure there's lots of people that enjoy handball.
Well, I mean, handball is huge in Croatia, and I think he's probably getting at the crazy score.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that's not normal.
It was a tough crowd for that.
It was a bit. I thought,
I was many, into it.
There's many David, more David, interesting David things
David gave
than
an approving face,
opinion.
Like, I see what you're getting at, Goran.
He was also trying to tell a few funnies as he was saying it, and I thought, I've got to give him a bit of support here.
But, well, it's the first time Djokovic has had a share of the lead, or...
Is
you
it?
Know, he's always been behind. And, well, I think, actually, no, maybe where they've
all been
tied
on, 20.
On 20.
They've all been on 20
So it's
together.
The first time he's had a share of the lead, you know, with just one other person.
Wow.
And of course, I thought Goran put it well when he said, you know, this was Djokovic's home court. You know, this is sort of his hold of serve, if you like. And now it's over to Roland Garros, which is Nadal's home court. And can Djokovic break? And I think...
Such a good analogy.
So good.
I like it.
So good.
I think the edge Djokovic has got is he's kind of got two home courts at the moment, because, you know, he's extremely dominant at Wimbledon as well. You know, he's won there every time since, what, 2018? Yeah. So I think it's advantage Djokovic. And I also think, Catherine, we were talking about this in the taxi on the way in to Melbourne Park today. Like, the Australian
great
Open...
taxi ride.
It was. We had... Anti-hero, come on. Mm. Which was...
We're talking about the Grand Slam race, listening to Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
it was a good time.
It was all of our favourite things.
Thanks for the clarification.
But I think the Australian Open sort of, in the men's game, has really set the tone for the season, because Federer, Nadal and Djokovic have had such a grip on that event that we haven't started the season with an unexpected winner. And it's like, oh, okay, now there's a chance for these youngsters. It's like every year we start clean and one of the big three wins the Australian Open. And it's like, oh, okay, so this is happening again. They're sort of gatekeeping those slams. And now we're on to Roland Garros and Wimbledon, which favour, you know, Nadal on clay, Djokovic on grass. Like, that's, as I've just said, that's their home sort of courts as well. Whereas, you know, if Djokovic had lost tonight, he wouldn't be tied, and suddenly, you know, Tsitsipas has won a slam,
and it would have
he's
felt
emboldened.
Like, perhaps felt like a victory. You could imagine sort of Felix or Auger-Aliassime and the rest of them punching the air like, it's possible!
I can beat Stefanos Tsitsipas!
There's a sort of,
the tone
sort of trickle-down effect.
Absolutely.
And a tone setting, but as it is... The tone has been set again. Yeah. Djokovic is way better than everyone else who was here. Obviously, you know, Nadal is compromised at the moment. And, you know, the idea of Novak Djokovic not winning more slams this season right now feels kind of preposterous. You know, he's playing so well.
And he can almost do his little power play of saying, I tell you what, you lot just toodle off to Indian Wells and Miami. I'll just put my feet up and then see you when we get down to the Grand Slams again.
Mm. Imagine this is getting. I don't know why I'm doing this thought experiment, but imagine he's on for the calendar slam and he's still not allowed to enter the US.
Well, that's obviously a possibility, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe even a probability. I'm not sure. I mean, and in fact, even in terms of results, I mean, I think Goran said in his presser, If Rafael Nadal steps on court at Roland Garros, he's the favourite. That was his view.
Goran also said he thinks Novak Djokovic can maintain this level, not just be around, maintain this kind of a level for
two or three years. That was a question I put to him because I am aware that, and we were talking about it. God, my name dropping all over the shop here. But I mean, I was aware that when we were talking to Jim Courier yesterday, I put it in terms of my excitement is that Djokovic hasn't lost anything, even though he's about to turn 36. And yet you've got a couple of players that really are exciting who are 19. And that at some point, you would think that one or two of those 19-year-olds is going to get really good consistently. And Djokovic is probably going to lose a bit. So when does that happen, and when do they meet in the middle? When do they cross paths? I mean, Alcaraz and Djokovic have just basically missed one another for the last two slams. So is there going to be a...
Give me Alcaraz Djokovic now.
I mean, look, the last few months of evidence is that Alcaraz ain't living with that, what we saw tonight, the last few months of evidence. He needs to reestablish himself.
And actually, he hasn't played for the last few months.
No, but he played at the end of last year and he didn't look that great.
Do you mean everything subsequent to the US
yes.
Open? Oh, yeah, but I don't read... That's not
but,
the
but,
real
but I actually think Alcaraz. I actually think if he can get himself fit, he now gets a chance to go to Indian Wells and Miami and rebuild some form, fitness, maybe, which...
And then head on to... Clay.
And whoever else does as well. You know, there's some other young players that might be able to just... Okay, there may not be a Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic there, most likely, but they get a chance to get some wins and get a feeling of aura.
And last season, we did see Djokovic struggle to sort of play well at the start of the clay court season. Now, I think a lot of that was because of the... sort of mental and emotional toll
he was burdened, wasn't
that
he?
Australia and the deportation took on him. But I suspect maybe some of it was also not having that many matches.
Inactivity, yeah.
You know, so we might well be in a similar situation again. I think he's planning to go to Dubai again, isn't he, like he did last year. But yeah, look, to me, Alcaraz is what can make the tour and the slams really, really compelling, you know, because he's already won a slam. Okay, Djokovic wasn't there, but that guy is special, Alcaraz, I think. And I don't think that Alcaraz not being here and Novak Djokovic didn't have to beat Nadal, like, I don't think it takes anything away from Novak Djokovic's achievement here. Like, Djokovic has had it really hard. He's won a lot of slams against, you know, Federer and Nadal. He had to break them up. And, you know, you beat who you beat in front of you. But I must say, Alcaraz not being here and that match with Rune not happening just, to me, took away some of the excitement on the men's side of this Australian Open. Yeah. It doesn't take anything away from the achievement, for sure. But, you know... Djokovic is 35, nearly 36. He does have a hamstring issue. He is playing with a lot of pressure. And I was just sort of waiting for the tour to step up a little bit more. And Tsitsipas did what he did on the other side of the draw. He was brilliant. He got to the final. I thought he was a little bit of a letdown in that final.
I'd agree.
And I just think Alcaraz and maybe Rune, but obviously Rune, you know, couldn't even get to that match with Djokovic. But just think they would have... It would have added something if sort of they'd met Djokovic, you know, just the excitement level, I suppose.
Agreed. I'm going to lower the tone briefly now because I'd like to talk about jackets. If we could, I'd like to take a little moment to talk about emblazoned jackets and blazers. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it when Federer did it in 2009. I didn't like it today. I don't like it. It's not Djokovic specific. David can vouch for how much I didn't like it when Federer did it.
Yeah.
I really don't like it.
Why not?
All I can think about is that was in your bag the whole time. You had to have it made up.
What do you do with it if you don't win?
Well, I'm consumed with thoughts of, did he have something made for the calendar slam?
Oh, good question.
Is there a jacket somewhere?
What do you think Tsitsipas
has
really got in his bag at the moment?
A really sad jacket. Did Tsitsipas have a number one jacket?
I bet he did. I bet he did.
That would be naff, wouldn't it?
He is a bit naff.
No, because he'd be world number one.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dual purpose.
One for the world number one rather than one for the first
slam. Another thing, when Roger Federer did his blazer, right. Which I did, it wasn't for me.
Okay.
That was when he overtook the record.
15.
Yeah.
This was for equaling the record. I mean, look, I don't think you should ever be having a
Federer
blazer
also
or a jacket
had an eight, I seem to recall. For
yes, but again, that was overtaking.
Wimbledon.
That was overtaking a record.
And I think they've all got stuff on their shoes, haven't they? And, you know.
No, no, but hang on. I'm making a serious point about clothing here, David.
Yeah, but they've all got their little, how many trophies they've won emblazoned on their
that's
shoes.
That's different. This was very specifically for the record.
Right.
Should he not have waited? I mean, I think we all think he's going to win 23. Has he gone too soon with the jacket? Because now if he has a 23 jacket, it's a bit like, oh, right, this is thing now. Then he's got to keep going and have 24 jacket.
I'm personally all right with it. I mean, I do think it's a bit naff, I do, but I also think, well, he has just won it. I mean, it is bloody hard, and I mean, it is extraordinary what he's done.
And his team had T-shirts with 10
I'm less into that. I'm less into the team T-shirts, to be quite honest with you. That I'm not a great fan of.
Isn't it same principle, though?
No, he's the one who's done it, you know.
Yeah, and also, some people in that team weren't there for, like, the first... six titles.
Yeah, I'm not so into that. I'm all right with
I
him.
I just think do whatever you want. But I don't know. I don't like it.
No, I don't love it either.
Great. Can you just weigh in on whether you think there was a calendar slam jacket?
I hadn't thought about that, but now I really want to know.
I would have thought so.
I'm desperate to know. So right. Where is it, David? Did he burn it?
Well, he's saving it for this year.
What about Serena Williams? Did she have one?
Serena's never done a number on an item of clothing.
Okay.
I remember these things, David. She's had the whole, you know, custard, you know, name on the shoes and stuff, but they all do that.
This
is very specific to the number.
I'm just wondering if there's like somewhere in tennis towers somewhere a lost property bin full of missed moments,
like tweets that live in drafts.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Mm. You know,
welcome to my world, David. This is all I can think about.
It's a good, yeah. Good talking.
There's a podcast in there. Yeah. Unused items of naff clothing. Great, everyone's tuning in. What did we think? We've alluded to those celebrations, Djokovic on the court, those scenes of him. Well, there's a couple of things here. There was the initial walking over to his player box and pointing towards his head, his heart, and his testicles.
Mm-hmm. Which is also a sort of thing that I remember Alcaraz, he didn't do it, he didn't point to his testicles, but he did do a post.
I thought jackets was lowering
we've said testicles now three times on this podcast, but it sort of works a bit better in Spanish because it's three C's. It's cabeza, corazón and cojones.
Okay.
So it sort of rolls off the tongue a bit more, and he did those emojis, didn't he?
Did he? That passed me by.
The emoji.
I'm glad it passed me by.
I feel like in emoji form and in pointing form, I don't really need it.
Yeah, I did think, Carlos, you know, I think quite highly of you. I could do without that emoji.
Thank you for not flagging that to my attention at the time.
No, I knew you wouldn't like
me
it.
By. This is not specific to Djokovic. Everybody uses that term. Mm. I know everyone's rolling their eyes at, you know, this is not the time to have this rant, but the gendered nature of that word, it's damaging. It's really damaging. Language matters. The fact that what you mean is courage.
Yeah.
But by calling it balls, you are making it something specifically male.
Yeah.
Exclusively and specifically male. And that is... damaging. It's the very I know Djokovic isn't thinking that when he's pointing to his testicles.
Four times.
I know nobody's thinking
no,
that.
No, he only pointed
when
once.
They use that terms, it's totally unconscious, but that's the very definition of unconscious bias.
Yeah.
This stuff matters. I've had to retrain myself. I used to say it, but I don't say it anymore. I've
Me neither. Actually, because you pointed it out to me a while back.
Mm.
So
yeah, and I think it's so. If it's never occurred to you, I think that's, you know.
I use gutsy now.
Absolutely, just use a non-gendered term. It's very easy. And just, there's no need to point, I don't think.
No. There's really not.
I'm going to attempt to raise the tone again now.
You must just be almost unconscious in that moment, though, I reckon.
Yeah. Well, the collapse in the player's box.
Yeah, that was something, wasn't it?
Was really something. Given how, frankly, unremarkable the match had been in lots of ways. As a tennis match, it wasn't that great. Then you had this moment, which I've never seen anything like that. It was happening just below us. And so we could see that something was happening. I could see him climbing sort of on the rails of the box and doing that. Raising his hand above his head and
I've got a close up because I've got the TV pictures at the time. And he was quite precarious what he was trying to do to get in there. And then they helped him in. And then it was just a mass scrum of celebration, bear hugs with about eight people at the same time. And then a really heartfelt hug with his brother that lasted forever and his mum as well. And you could see that he was starting to become really emotional at that point. And then it was almost like he passed out with the emotion. And he just sort of, his energy just drained from him. And he had to lie down sobbing. And he couldn't handle it. He just couldn't handle the amount he's been carrying around with him, I suspect, you know, in order to function. And you can have whatever opinions you have about the hamstring and the way he handles it. No matter what, this was a lot of pressure he's carrying around, and it just all came out in that moment. And and for about a minute or two, he was on his back, and they were trying to just sort of almost bring him round or just help him to kind of compose himself again. And then he got back down onto the court.
And then he goes and sits on the chair and sobs into the towel for a good period of time. I mean, it was an extraordinary release of emotion.
Mm, yeah. No, I can relate to it. I think in one or two just very different situations in my life when I've tried to be strong about something and not let anything get to me, and then you finally reach a point where you can take no more, or you reach the end, or whatever it might be, and you just sort of let it go.
It was, it was quite a moment, wasn't it? Seven or six to pass. There was one of those moments that we now all sort of slightly wince at, don't we, as a result of our tennis relived experience, where it was said in totally confident terms by Todd Woodbridge, who was emceeing the ceremony, and by Novak Djokovic, both on the court in the press conference, you will be a Grand Slam champion. Goran Ivanišević said it as well, didn't he? Did we all feel that same level of confidence about that?
I think he will win one. Yeah.
Just one? Wow.
Maybe more, but I think he'll win one. I think he's such a good clay court player. I think he's got a really good chance there. I think he's got a good chance at this tournament because he's only 24. So he, in 5 years' time, I think as long as he doesn't get badly injured, he's still going to be a hell of an athlete. Mm. And Djokovic is probably going to be gone.
Well, that's it. I think he probably will win one, maybe a handful. But I think he's going to have to wait for Djokovic to go or sneak in at the one or two slams a year that Djokovic doesn't win for the next few years.
I'd still like to see him play Djokovic again on clay at Roland Garros, though. I think that's a really good match.
Yes, I agree. I think their two matches at Roland Garros have both gone to five sets, haven't they? And the surface helps Tsitsipas there in a way that the surface helps Djokovic here in that matchup. He's such a good clay court player. I do see a French Open in his future, I think. I thought he'd show up more today, though, I must say.
Me too.
And it's again, it's that tricky balance of trying to judge how much of that was because it was Novak Djokovic down the other end. If he's playing someone else, maybe Tsitsipas would have played better today. I think that's probably true. I think Novak Djokovic just does have an effect on players. It's part of what makes him so great. But yes, I feel pretty sure, sort of as, not quite as sure as you can be, but pretty sure that Tsitsipas will win a slam one day.
I can tell you what Stefanos Tsitsipas feels about this. He says, quote, "I'm born a champion. I can feel it in my blood. I've felt it since I was a kid."
Oh, well, I quite like that.
It's an amazing line. Yeah, I left that press conference just thinking, imagine feeling imagine? That way.
Good for him.
Can you imagine how different our childhoods would have been if we felt that we were... that being a champion was in our blood. I mean, I can't imagine, but yeah, good for him.
I would love to see it. I have to say, I'd love to see him win one day because of what it would mean to him and those around him and his support and Greece trying to win their first ever Grand Slam title. I think it would be an amazing story one day.
I do think he'll do it. I don't know, if you'd cast back at 2 or 3 years and the idea of talking about him winning, you know, one or two, he was being anointed, wasn't he? People were talking about the number of Grand Slam finals that he and Felix Auger-Aliassime would face against one another as if that was a done deal. Mm.
Well, absolutely.
It's a slight shift, isn't it?
I'm as guilty of it as anybody. I see somebody who's exciting and I get carried away before other players and other coaches have started to work out where the weak spots might be. And then you have this moment of reality hitting home. But also adjustments can take place within that, because a year ago I wasn't as optimistic about Stefanos Tsitsipas as I am right now. You know,
true.
So
yes, true.
It can shift.
Same. And again, to quote Stefanos Tsitsipas, it's a very long season.
Yeah.
You know, in these moments when we record these post-final shows, it feels like everything, doesn't it? But it's a long season, and tennis moves like that.
And actually, that is something Tsitsipas needs to get better at in performing in the second half of the season.
Yes.
You know, there's four opportunities to win a slam every year, and it sort of feels like Tsitsipas only has two because he plays so well in Australia, where he gets this amazing support, and, you know, he's a kind of a breath of fresh air every time we come to the Australian Open. We're really interested in what Tsitsipas is doing. And then he's always a threat at Roland Garros because he's so good on clay. I don't think he's figured out grass yet, and he's never performed well at the US Open. I think he's got an even win-loss record at Wimbledon and the US Open together. Mm. You know, he's losing as many matches at those two slams as he is winning. Wow. And for someone of his caliber, I feel like he needs to improve that, just to, you know, give himself more shots, because the US Open has been the open slam, hasn't it? You know, that's been where Thiem and Medvedev and Alcaraz have managed to, you know, to get slams. And I wouldn't say that they're all that much better or that much sort of more complete than Tsitsipas. You know, Tsitsipas is a great tennis player, but he tails off in the second half of the season quite a lot of the time. I know he won the ATP finals in 2019, but that has been a pattern. So I'm interested to see whether he can sort of improve that this year, I suppose.
Couple of other bits of business. Picking up on the women's final yesterday, we had the champions photo shoot with Aryna Sabalenka today. Now, I quite often don't love these because it's sort of, they can have a bit of a beauty pageant feel sometimes. But I loved today's. Aryna Sabalenka voguing on a gondola with a sort of elderly man pushing her along. The gondolier? think that's what they're called. He had his little dog on the gondola. It was such a vibe. The photos are amazing. And she just looked so joyful. So often when people win their first slam, I know the classic example we always use is Andy Murray winning that 2012 US Open. There were so many emotions that weren't joy. You know.
Yeah,
relief,
he's spoken
exhaustion.
A lot about that, hasn't he? Yeah, she seemed in the moment. Really.
Absolutely, she seems to be really feeling her feelings in it, and it's brilliant.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news: ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
The other thing I just wanted to pick up on from the women's final yesterday was a couple of things, starting with a tweet that you might have seen during the final from Pam Shriver, who tweeted, "As I watch Rybakina try to win her second major in 7 months, I hope she finds a coach who speaks and treats her with respect at all times and does not ever accept anything less. Now, today, Elena Rybakina has posted on Instagram the following. She said, "After a great AO, I have seen some disturbing comments on social media about the behaviour of my coach, Stefano Vukov. She said, I want to clarify any misinterpretations. Stefano has believed in me for many years before anyone else did. We plotted a strategy together in how I could achieve great things, and his method shows in my Grand Slam success so far. He is a passionate coach with a lot of knowledge about tennis. Unlike people that are making these comments, he has great knowledge about me as a person and as an athlete. Those who will know me well will know that I would never accept a coach that didn't respect me and all our hard work. I may be quiet on the court and in general, but inside me is a competitive athlete that wants to achieve great things. And Stefano has helped me greatly in this way, so please disregard any fake news to the contrary." Now, Pam isn't the only person to question some of Vukov's behaviour in the player box with Elena Rybakina. Laura Robson, who's been working for Tennis Australia and Eurosport this week, said on Eurosport that he seems to be very negative. She was pretty critical of it. She said, I don't know how she deals with this coach, with her coach. So Pam isn't alone, but she's probably been the most direct and the most vocal, as she was yesterday. Stefano Vukov himself he told Fox Sports Australia on Fridays. This was before Pam's tweet. He said, it's easy to just take clips and then make something controversial. This is part of our sport. It's normal. There's 10,000 people out there. To get the attention of the player is definitely not easy, and people don't understand that. I have to scream out something if she's off track. People can interpret that how they want, but at the end of the day, we're just doing our job. Coaching is now allowed, and she, that's Elena Rybakina, is using it in the best possible way. And that's all from a piece by Molly McElwee in The Telegraph. Now, look, I completely respect Elena Rybakina's right and desire to have her say about that situation, about the relationship that's obviously bearing a lot of fruit on the court and that she is obviously happy with off the court. I think what Pam is saying in her tweet is some boundaries shouldn't be crossed regardless of context, right? She's saying Rybakina and lots of others that are weighing in on this are saying that you don't know their relationship, you don't know the details, nobody knows what's going on behind the scenes except the people involved, and you've got no right to criticise. Pam's take on, and this isn't just specific to this situation, this is her take and what she's trying to implement on the sport as a whole, is there need to be boundaries that are uncrossable regardless of context. Mm.
Yeah, and I think appearances in a coaching box in that situation is one of those. I think what she wants to do is raise standards across the board in terms of how the coaching and player relationship works, so that it is very clear.
And the level of sort of the level of professionalism, I don't mean in terms of tennis coaching, boundaries, it's all about boundaries.
Yeah. And there will be different types of relationship, coach-player relationship out there. But what was absolutely clear to me is that did not look great to see him shouting at her. He may try and explain it away the way he has, but it was not great to see. And there are plenty that are able to get their messages across without doing that. And I would, at the very least, just like to see him stop doing that.
Mm.
Personally, yeah. That's just my opinion. I'm watching it. You know, she Elena may just say that there's nothing wrong with it. I don't want to see that personally.
Mm. Yeah. Right. I think that might be it, folks. I think that might be it for the 2023 Australian Open. Matt's got something to say. Is it about pizza?
I was wondering where the pizza.
Well, it's been waiting outside the door, but
I thought I was going to be dramatically called during the podcast to go and collect the pizza, but it's okay.
No, the pizza's now cold.
It's now cold. We can.
But the podcast has been red hot.
Like Jason Kubler.
Nobody's that hot.
I was going to say we've had other champions today.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. I'm looking at this written on a screen in front of me, and yet I still missed it off. And, thank you, Matt.
And Barbora Krejcikova and Katerina Siniakova just keep winning at these slams. They've now won, well, four in a row that they've played, because they won the Australian Open last year. They then couldn't play the French Open because Krejcikova contracted COVID and had to pull out. They then won Wimbledon. They then won the US Open, and now they've won the Australian Open, beating Shibahara and Aoyama in two straight sets. And I think it's their seventh slam together overall. They're such a formidable team. And I find them quite fascinating as a duo, because they're very different on court. I mean, Siniakova was getting really quite sort of het up in that second set. Lots of looks over to the boxes, whereas Krejcikova just manages to sort of take it all in her stride and seems so calm. And I think they play off each other really well, yeah, as a dynamic. And yeah, they're head and shoulders above the rest of the teams at the moment. And sort of be interesting to see whether they can complete the non-calendar slam at Roland Garros. That would be a great storyline there.
Well, when Serena did it, it was the Serena Slam. They don't have a team name, do they?
No.
We'll work on that, folks.
They don't even need one.
Well, for catchiness purposes, they might. But we got a few months to work on that.
We prefer team names to jackets with.
We do.
With numbers emblazoned on them.
I have some thank yous, some very heartfelt thank yous. First of all, to our newsletter predictors, each and every one of them for this Australian Open. Matthew, Lynn, Dawn, PJF.
Which is PJ, Joe and Fiona.
We like that. And, of course, the now iconic Reggie.
I mean, what a legend. Terrible at
Honestly,
predictions, but
what a star.
Absolutely. What is the breakout star of this Australian Open?
How can anybody be that bad?
I will remember the 2023 Australian Open for Andy Murray, for Aryna Sabalenka, for Novak Djokovic, and for Reggie. He's been that big a part of my Australian Open experience.
Who actually won the predictions?
Matthew won the predictions.
Well done, Matthew. Well done, Matthew. Sorry that you've been outshone by somebody that got 0 points.
Out of how many goes?
I think Matthew understands.
How many tries did Reggie have?
14 predictions.
And he got 0 right.
14 wrong predictions.
I mean, that takes some doing that. And he was trying to actually get them right, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
There he was, yeah.
We love you, Reggie.
If you haven't seen his videos that Catherine has posted on our Instagram story, go and have a look. We were watching them on loop in the cab.
We love Reggie.
He's such a legend.
We started off the tournament with the curse of Netflix, and now we've got the curse of Reggie. It's the year of curses. I would like to say an extremely heartfelt thank you to Hannah and Andrew. Better known as Handrew,
hey.
Who've done absolutely sterling work for us on Twitter this tournament, as they always do. Tireless, always with a twinkle in the eye. They are brilliant. Thank you very much. An extremely heartfelt thank you to Gorana, who has designed and sent 15 newsletters this tournament. Gorana, I know for a fact that you've been bought a hoodie from this Australian Open, and it matches the one that I am wearing right now.
Yeah.
And it's very, very comfortable.
Great.
We'd like to say thank you.
Was that supposed to be a surprise, David?
She didn't listen.
We'd like to say thank you to Sarah, or Woolly, as she is very fondly known, for miscellaneous help that she gives us throughout the course of the year and every Grand Slam, including doing pole vaults, which I had a say in.
I know. I was right out of the loop. I was just in. I was enjoying watching.
Mm. Yeah, it was a very dystopian thing, me sort of Catherine was liaising into it, about pole vaults anyway. And we would, of course, like to offer a very sincere thank you to On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider, for sponsoring us throughout this Australian Open and for sending us to Indian Wells, for giving us something to look forward to at the end of this trip as we head back to -5 degrees in the UK. For friends of the podcast, it doesn't end there, folks. We have got coming up for you in the next few days not only an Australian Open review show with voice notes.
Yeah.
But also a Q&A show coming at you in a few days' time, at the start of next week. And of course, many of you won't yet have had a chance to listen to the special that we did with Jim Courier yesterday. Was that yesterday? Goodness yeah. me.
It's probably 2 days ago now, isn't it?
But that's up there. It'll be up there forevermore. And yes, there's some talk about the Djokovic-Tsitsipas match that's now slightly out of date. But there's lots of other really brilliant chat from Jim Courier. It's awesome stuff, so do check that out and become a friend of the Tennis Podcast if you feel so inclined. And we have our usual thank yous. We have our Australian Open mascot, Cordelia. Hello, Cordelia, you've been a star. We like Cordelia.
Yeah, we do.
Cordelia is awesome.
Cordelia, who isn't named after the character from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but gives me an opportunity to at least mention Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which we appreciate. David, you've got Maisie.
Yeah, Maisie, I think that was a solid enough start. We didn't get 0 out of 14, so, you know. Thanks
Reggie's
for your support.
Reggie's forevermore our safety net, isn't he? I've got Xenia. Hello, Xenia. Didn't go well today, but we had a late tournament surge, which we're very grateful for. So
leapfrogged
thank you,
Xenia. Us, Maisie.
And Matt, is Darwin happy with his choices?
Don't think so.
Yes, I actually had an email from Darwin.
Oh, yeah.
I did actually used to get
emails back in the day.
Loving your predictions prowess, Matt.
Oh,
that's annoying.
I didn't get those type of emails. I got commiserations emails. But very, very heartfelt, positive ones.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks, Jamie, Drew and Hannah. They're our executive producers. Thank you to them.
They're awesome, aren't they?
We have shout-outs.
We have Louise Strecker in San Diego, California.
All right, Louise.
Hello, Louise.
Like Louise Anzamar Engzel.
Oh!
The umpire of tonight's match between Novak Djokovic and Stefanos Tsitsipas. Yes!
She did a great job, actually, I think.
That was awesome, serious
crowd control involved there. Sterling work from Louise and from you.
Thank you, Louise, David, for making us bring up the umpire, because she deserved a mention.
Thank you, Louise.
And thanks for supporting the pod.
We've also got Brona Staunton in Dublin.
Oh, we know Brona, don't we?
Brona, all right, Brona.
Lovely Brona. Hello. Thank you for your consistent support of the pod. It's much appreciated.
We're going to struggle for a tennis reference out of Brona, though, right?
Yeah, Ireland's not really a big Conan Island.
Yep. We always mention colours in these situations. Always.
Okay, well, thank you, Brona.
Yeah, thank you, Brona.
And Connor for existing and giving us someone to mention.
And tennis Broners, get your act together so we've got somebody to mention.
And last but by no means least, it is Simon Pearce, who we also know.
Hello, Simon.
He's in New York via London.
All right, Simon.
Hello, Simon.
Simon, who sends the most incredible emails.
Like Simon Briggs.
Simon Briggs.
As in the name. Simon Briggs doesn't send us incredible emails.
I mean, no, he doesn't.
No. Tennis, like tennis player Simons? It's not a very tennis player-y name,
Simon
is it?
Simon Aspelin, a former Swedish doubles player.
Gilles Simon.
Okay.
No, I
same
thought,
spelling.
I thought that was
same
good.
Spelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can have it at 3:10.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you to all of our friends of the Tennis Podcast. If you would like to become a friend and get yourself a shout out, an intro, or just support the show and enable us to come to these events and cover the tennis in the way that we've been able to for the last fortnight, then become a friend of the Tennis Podcast. That is the way to do it. We feel the value of being here. We feel it every single day. I hope that you, the listener, feel that as well. We are not able to cover these events the same way remotely. We'd do it, but it would not be the same. Our show is massively enhanced by being able to be here. So thank you for making that possible, friends of the Tennis Podcast. And we'll be in Indian Wells in just a few short weeks' time, bringing you coverage from there, thanks to On Location. So, from the AO 2023 at 3:11 a.m., it is over and out from the Tennis Podcast.
Good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.